Welcome back to Shattering Myths in Context. We're about to discuss one of the most challenging statements in the Torah. And before we jumped into it, I wanted to explain why it's important to deal with the challenges and why religious myths, the very basis of religion, exists because people don't do what we're going to do. They don't read a discussion in context, and if you remove a statement from context, you almost invariably misapply it, misconstrue it, or they will mistranslate it, as in the case of the examples we have provided. Now, one of the great examples is this particular statement from Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah 31, where Christians will say that God announced the arrival of their new covenant or New Testament, where God said nothing of the sort. As a matter of fact, when you come to understand what God is saying, that the covenant is going to be reaffirmed with Yahuda, those who are related to Yah, and Yisrael, those who endure and exist with God, and that he's going to do so by writing the Torah inside of us, placing his teaching inside of us, you recognize that being the only difference between the existing covenant and its reaffirmation, it means that the one thing that is different now is that we can choose to reject the Torah, where when he returns, everyone will have chosen to have the Torah be part of their lives, integrated into their lives, the fabric of their lives. And God is going to give us that benefit, writing his teaching, his guidance inside of us that becomes part of our very nature. And of course, the moment you recognize that is the one thing that makes the reaffirmation of the Torah different than the current existence of the covenant as it's presented in the Torah, you realize that there is a 0% possibility that Christianity can be right with its New Testament, which is based upon Paul's letters, which is an abrogation of the Torah. This is the full and wholesale incorporation of the Torah. Just another example of how when you take something out of context, you don't read the entirety of what is being said, you almost invariably come to the wrong conclusion. You form an errant opinion. Now, that said, Larry, what I'd like to do is to represent this passage that we were considering. And as I said on Friday, the most important thing that you can recognize is related to the statement that you made about Yahusha, saying that the recognition of him as the Messiah, the one doing the work of Yahweh, is that this is him in the process, upon this rock, if you will, building his mikre. What he is demonstrating for us here is an example of the mikre. Remember, Abram asked God to prove to him that he was going to provide the benefits that he had shown him in heaven. You know, Yahweh took Abram to heaven to show him the benefits of the covenant so that he would understand what it was that he was inheriting, which was that he was going to be transformed like light, empowered like light, enlightened like light, become immortal like light, become perfect like light. And that's what God showed him. And so and now Abraham says, okay, wow, I get it. I trust you on this, but would you mind proving it? Because God is not a God of faith or belief, but a God of knowing, of understanding, of trusting and relying. And so he said, all right, I'm going to help you understand this process. And so what did he do? He turned immediately to a festival feast. And that's the most important aspect of all of this, is to recognize that the very first thing that God did is say, all right, we're going to have a festival feast. Now, why would festival feast be important, Larry?
Well, because that's what all the Moed Mikre are. They're festival feasts. They're chag. All of them.
Right, right. Chag is the Hebrew word for festival feast, for party, for celebration. The means to benefit from the promises of the covenant are delineated in the Moed Mikre, in these festival feasts, in these chag. The doorway is Passover. The welcome mat is matzah on yeasted bread. The adoption process that provides the inheritance is bukurim, which is firstborn children. And then we are empowered and enriched at Shavua, which is the celebration of the promise of the Shabbat. That is the means that God enables the five benefits of his covenant. And he does them through these chag, through the Moed Mikre, which are celebrations, festival feasts, where we're invited to meet with God. And so what is the first thing?
Suddenly, what Yahusha did ties in completely with the plan that Yahweh had all along.
Right.
Nothing had to be changed. It makes perfect sense.
Right. Yahusha was the living manifestation, a diminished manifestation of Yahweh, honoring Yahweh's promises to enable the covenant's benefits through these seven invitations to meet with him. That's what was occurring. And so Yahweh immediately, in this case, directs Abraham's attention and ours to festival feasts, because that's the means that he uses to give us these promised benefits. The second is that, well, I am fairly certain that there were tangible representatives of the items that are listed here that were barbecued and consumed, because God loves to celebrate a good meal around a campfire. I am also convinced that every item in this list served a symbolic purpose, and that the symbolic meaning here is vastly more important than the mundane. The mundane was nice for Abraham and for Yahweh, and that it provided a lovely meal. You know, you have here milk to drink and steak to consume. I know you like your ribeyes. I like my New York. One of these fellows might have liked filet. And so you've got beef to consume. You've got the wool of a goat to lay on, and maybe even its flesh to barbecue. It's hard to beat barbecued lamb. And so that was the menu. But it is what these things symbolize that are so telling. So let's read through the list here, and then let's think about what they might represent. Because throughout the Torah, there are lots of instructions that we simply cannot do today, and that the vast majority of people throughout history have not been able to do. But there's nothing in the Torah that we can't learn from. Every word of it provides instruction. That's what Torah means, to instruct. Every word provides instruction that we can learn from, just as do these. And this is Yahweh.
He asks us to shamar, which means read and understand. It doesn't mean obey.
Correct. Yeah, the instruction on his instruction on the Torah teaching is to closely examine and carefully consider it, to shamar it. Doesn't mean, he does not ask us to obey it. There's no Hebrew word for obey. Does not ask us to keep it. Shamar, which is translated keep, does not mean keep. It means to focus on, to examine, to consider. And that's what we're going to do. And he, who is Yahweh, said to him, who is Abraham, select and grasp hold of, lakah, accept, receive, and obtain. So this is God providing this to Abraham. These are things that God is offering him, and he is encouraging Abraham to accept these things, because they're symbolic of how we go through this process of knowing and understanding and capitalizing upon Yahweh and what he's offering. Select and grasp hold of, accept, receive, and obtain. To approach me, law. To approach me, a mature young cow. Now, why would he say, before we get to the mature young cow, why would he say to approach me? Well, God took him to heaven to witness the nature of life and life in his home in heaven. That's where he took him. So it's important. And Abraham said, well, you know, that's great. I trust and rely on you. But should you provide me with a bit more assurance that I'm actually going to receive these wonderful things, that I get to go to your home? And so what does God say? Well, I want you to select and grasp hold of these things to approach me, because That's what the purpose of the covenant is for us to approach God. Then he has this list. He said there are a number of things on this list. Three of them are designated as 1, 2, and 3 in a sequence of things. A mature young cow, an eglah, a female cow, as one of three things. Shalosh, as one in a series of three events which will occur in succession. And the wool of a goat, which is Ez, which means strength and might, which comes from being properly fortified, overwhelmingly powerful, as one of a series of three events which will occur in succession. Shalosh again. And a male lamb. It's from Ael, which means the leader and shepherd of a flock. It's the framework of a doorway. As the third of three things which will occur. In addition, then, a dove, which he used the Hebrew word tor, which is uncommon for dove. It's usually Yonah. But he used tor, T-W-R. T-W-R is the basis for Torah. And, of course, the dove represents the Spirit of God. So as to fly away as a young bird, gozal, to be a nesting bird, from gezal, ready to be plucked out of the nest and taken away. So he accepted, received, and obtained for him to approach all of these things. And separating them into equal portions, he divided them accordingly in the middle and offered the individual the entire portion to approach, inviting his friends, associates, neighbors, and fellow countrymen. But with the birds, he did not divide and separate. So, if you don't have a big picture view of this, if you don't consider it in context, understand where Yahweh had taken Abraham, what Abraham had seen, what it means, and then Abraham wanting some assurance that all of this inheritance of the covenant, which is to become transformed like light as God's children and living in his home, was going to occur. God provided this answer in the context of a festival feast, which is how he provides the benefits of the covenant to his covenant children. So in context now, this makes sense. Take it out of context, it makes no sense. When you understand that all of these items on this list are designed to help us approach God and to have assurance that we're going to receive those benefits, then even they make sense. And we'll return to explain what role each of these plays in us coming to know and trust God. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Mess. Now, each of these items in the context of the Mikra, which are invitations to meet with God, are providing us with insights as how we can not only approach God, as he said, to approach me, but also to have assurance. That's the context here. Abraham was looking for assurance that the benefits of the covenant would be afforded him. And so the first thing is a mature young cow, a female cow. And what is the first thing you think of with a female cow? What do you get from a female cow? Milk, right? Mm. So what do you feed an infant for the infant to grow and to become strong?
Milk.
Milk. And so by having the female cow, what he's saying is, listen, you may be 90 years old, and I get it that some way, you know, you're confused as to how an inheritance is going to benefit you. But now that you get it and that you really know what you're going to inherit, which is to live in my home and to become transformed like light, milk is appropriate because you're now a baby. You've gone from being an old man to being a young baby in the covenant, and you need milk to grow. And the milk, Yahweh, equates to his word, to his testimony. Then once you go from just listening to what God has to say, which is a good thing, to Shema, to Shamar, which is observing, carefully examining and considering what God has to say, to Shamar. So the transition from simply listening to studying what God has to say, really observing what God has to say. Then you go from this, it's this transition from milk to meat, where you're getting really solid nutrition, particularly as meat represents an influx of protein, which is essential on the way that our brains operate. And so that's what the mature young cow represents. The next thing on the list of three is the wool of a goat. It's Ez. Now, could it be the entirety of the goat? Yes, but the Ez, the wool of the goat, is the most direct connotation. And physically, in that world, it's what beds were made out of. What people, but again, it's what chairs and sofas and the equivalent of, where would you sit down so that you'd be really comfortable? You'd be shielded from the chill of the ground. You could wrap it around you. You'd be sheltered from the chill of the air. So you'd be absolutely comfortable as you are being nourished by God. In the ancient world, it would be as the wool of a goat, which is why the word also means to be properly fortified, to be empowered. Then the third is of these three things is that happen in sequence is the male lamb, the AL. The male lamb is the means to open the door to God's home. The Passover lamb. The male lamb is the shepherd, representing Yahweh, Yahusha's role in our lives. The male lamb, A-L, is also the Hebrew word for the framework of the door, because it's he's now speaking of, I'm going to open the door to my home. This is the place you wanted to go? Well, it's the A-L, the sacrificial lamb, the Lamb of God, the Passover lamb, Yahusha's body. That represents the doorway to heaven, that represents the living embodiment of Passover, of this festival feast that opens the door to God's home. Those are the three things. They're stunningly important from a symbolic point of view. That's not to say that they didn't dine on these things and weren't nourished by them. They were. And enjoyed
that the... That happens to be the very day that he was crucified.
Passover.
Passover, yeah. Right. Acting as the Passover lamb.
Right. Yeah. And by the way, you know, that even if you were a Christian and you say, okay, well, I'm gonna celebrate what occurred on Passover where Yahusha's body became the Passover lamb, you've got a real problem there. Because if you were to observe Passover and you weren't to observe matzah the next day, it's actually counterproductive. Right.
You'd get eternity, but you wouldn't get perfection.
Right. It's very much like the malfeasance of our military, where you make a bad situation worse. You know, right now you're mortal. That's not good. But if you become immortal, but you don't benefit from matzah, which is the removal of sin from your being, that's far worse than being mortal. There's something worse than dying. And that's being eternally separated from God. And that's what would happen if you were a Christian and you properly celebrated Pesach Passover. But you ignored matzah, unyeasted bread, is that you become immortal, but eternally separated from God. That means that your existence would be in a black hole with all of the other religious and political zealots that have taken people away from God. So don't go there. The Passover lamb is the first step. It's the doorway. It's the framework of the doorway into God's home. But there are seven of these festival feasts, not just one. So these three things that Yahweh designated as three things that would work in conjunction with one another, take us from the milk as an infant to the meat as a growing child of the Word of God, through the protective covering and the comfort that comes from the set apart spirit represented by that wool of the goat, which is overwhelmingly powerful, and then to the doorway that leads to God's home of the sacrificial lamb, and that those three things occur in succession, which bring us into God's home with assurance. Now, it says, in addition to a dove, and the dove was written as Tor. This is important because in Hebrew, Torah is written the same way, T-W-R. The only difference is that there is an H at the end of Torah, so it's T-W-R-H. H makes it feminine because God is trying to associate his Torah with his set-apart spirit who enlightens us as we study his Torah. And Torah means teaching. So this dove is really... the Spirit of God focusing our attention on the Torah so as to fly away as a young bird. Again, God is depicting a metaphor that he uses several times, and that is he presents his spirit as a bird with sitting on a nest, wings spread out, protecting her children, nurturing her children, feeding her children, protecting her children, helping her children grow. And it's the metaphor that God provides for us so that as we grow, we grow wings and we can fly right along with the set apart spirit. That is the presentation that has been made. And so the next thing it says, Abraham, he accepted, received, obtained, selected, and grasped hold of for him to approach all of these things. He understood what they represented. Now, then there's this interesting bit of dialogue. It says, and then separating them into equal portions, he divided them accordingly in the middle. Now, this is written in your English translations as, he just cut them in two. It's not really what it says. It's all about separation. If you want to participate in the covenant, you have to be set apart from the world of man, religious and political and military and economic institutions, unto the world of God, which is defined by his Torah teaching. And so that's what he's talking about here, as to how these things set us apart, how they separate us from one world and bring us into the one that Abraham had seen, living as light in heaven. And then recognize that these were gifts from God. He said, I'm accepting these as offerings from the individual. As him providing the entirety of what it is that I need to end up in his home. And the individual, Larry, it brings us right to one of your favorite passages. He was referring now God himself, because he's the one that inspired these words. He's speaking of what occurred. He's referring to himself, not as God here, but as an individual, because that's the nature of this covenant relationship. It's with a father and his children, as a individual to individual. God's not trying to lord over us. He's not trying to overpower us. He's not trying to subject us. He wants us to approach him as an individual, and he approaches us as an individual. And so the Hebrew word for individual is what's written here, ish. And ultimately, as you know,
the hardest thing you'll ever get through to people is that Yahweh is not a religious deity.
No.
I mean, we can thank all the clerics and all the copy editors and scribes and traditions and we'll never know Yahweh if we try to approach him in a religious way, will we? Because he calls it a disgusting abomination.
Right. So. Yeah. In fact, one of the things that God says is I when he returns, the thing that he's going to celebrate is he'll never be called Lord again, because Lord destroys everything that he represents. You know, Lord is one who imposes themselves. A Lord is someone people bow down to. A Lord is someone that owns and controls. And a Lord is someone that is worshipped by their subjects. That's the antithesis of what God is trying to convey as the Father of the Covenant. And so
yesterday I had a debate with a scholar. Mm-hmm. A scholar.
Okay.
And he showed me that right there in Shemoth, it says Adon.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, it doesn't. It says upright one.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had taken, he swallowed the pill that Edon can be changed to Adon by the clerics.
Mm-hmm.
And that can become Lord
mm-hmm.
when he's really talking about the upright pillar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every time that Edon and Adon are written exactly the same way in Hebrew.
Yeah, Edon.
Right.
Edon.
Yeah, Edon. And one is used throughout the Torah to mean the foundation and the upright pillar of the tabernacle. And Edon is described to convey the foundation of the tabernacle, which is God's home, and the place where his witness is made available to us, and the upright pillar. The upright pillar is really important because the upright pillar is what raises the protective covering of the tent of the witness. It enables you to enlarge it and to make it secure. And so Yahusha is the upright one. He is the upright pillar that's set into the foundation that is God's home. And so that's the imagery, and it's used throughout the Torah in that way, as Edon, meaning the upright pillar that's established into the foundation of God's home.
And how did I know I was right and he was wrong? Well, I knew I was right because in Hoshea, he says he wants to be called an individual,
right.
You know,
and not a lord.
Greeted as an individual, not as a lord. And then in Yirmiyahu, he says, "You've forgotten me because of Baal." And what was Baal's title?
Lord. If you translate to Baal, it means lord. And Baal is ascribed to Satan. So since Yahweh picked the term Baal to be the title and name of Satan, the adversary, you can be certain, without using a whole lot of your gray matter, that God did not choose another word for Lord, Edom, to apply it to himself. And it's just, you don't have to be the smartest cat in the world to recognize if God picked the most common Hebrew word for Lord, which is Baal, to apply to the adversary as his name and title, that he most certainly isn't going to use another Hebrew word for Lord, Edom, to describe himself. And so all you have to do is to say, all right, these three letters, the Edion, what do they convey? How are they used, particularly in his Torah teaching? What do they convey there? And you find that it's always used in the conjunction of the upright pillar that is established and set into the foundation of the tabernacle, which represents Yahweh's home, the place where he provides his witness and where he takes care of his children. It's not hard.
It was really pretty rough for the scholar. He told me I really needed to get it together. So
So
you're telling me you have all kinds of respect for Yahweh's name. He told me he did. So then when Yahweh says not to call him Lord,
right.
He says, "You forget me because you call me Lord."
Right.
He says, "You call me Father and you call me Lord, neither of which I am. But if I'm a Lord, why don't you at least respect me, you clerics who despise my name?"
Right.
And when he says these things, he's just wasting time, huh?
Yahweh actually says... You're quoting from Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu is an interesting book, in that it's the only book that I'm aware of in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, wherein the preamble says this is not written for the Yehudim, it's not written for Yisrael, it's written for the Goyim, the Gentiles.
Mm-hmm.
So it's written about Yehudim and Yisrael, but for the benefit of Gentiles. And the entire book exists to expose and condemn religious, political, and military malfeasance. It is an attack on the religions of the day and religions today. And in the midst of it, God addresses the single greatest crime that has been perpetrated relative to his word, his testimony. And he says that clerics have taken his name away from his testimony and replaced it with Lord because they despise his name. And that was how you answered the scholar that wanted people to believe that God wants to be called by the title Lord, when in Yirmiyahu he says, Jeremiah conclusively, that it was scholars, it was religious clerics who deliberately removed my name from my testimony and replaced it with Lord because they despised my name. Now, confronted with that,
he says it also. He says it also in Hoshea.
In Hoshea, he has a little different take. In Hoshea, he just says that the thing that I'm going to enjoy most when I return is never being called Lord again. That's a little different take on it. The Yirmiyahu is more poignant for the scholars' argument, because it says that, religious scholars hate my name, which is why they replaced my name with Lord. And what you'll find is that the 7,000 times that Yahweh appears in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, religious publications have replaced all 7,000 of them with Adonai, which means my Lord. Just simply took one away and plunked in the other. all because they despise his name. And they genuinely despise it. The Roman Catholic Church hates God's name to the point they've made it a crime to use his name in any one of their buildings as part of any one of their gatherings.
They've outlawed the creator of the universe's name, even though he says to become part of the family. And Yasha Yahu, what?
Yeah.
Love of the name is part of it, isn't it?
Right. Absolutely.
And I understand why that is. After having been on the path long enough, you are attacked on all sides.
Right.
And you're attacked by people that say, well, it's wrong because you're using his name in vain. He never says that.
No.
You know.
No, as a matter of fact, God damn it is not a crime according to God. It's the negating of his name. The using his name, taking his name for naught, to diminish the value of his name is the unforgivable sin. And so the reason that love of his name, which is to do the opposite, to celebrate his name, is so important, is that we are adopted into the covenant. We become the sons and daughters of Yahweh. And so we become like Yahusha ben Yahweh. It becomes Yada ben Yahweh. Our name becomes the son of Yahweh himself. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to the final segment of Shattering Myths for today, our third and concluding segment of the third hour. The last statement in Yah's overall depiction of this festival feast that he was throwing on behalf of Abraham so that Abraham could know for certain that he would receive the benefits of the covenant, which is to live with God and be transformed from mortal into light, is he said, but with the birds he did not divide or separate them. And the reason that the birds were not separated is first, the first of the birds represents the Torah. It's spelled T-W-R, Torah. And this Torah is indivisible. You know, God specifically says, I don't want you subtracting from this. I don't want you adding to it. I don't want you subtracting from it. And the Spirit's role as the dove and the Torah are also inseparable. They work together to teach us, to help us know and then understand. Also, there's a direct relationship between the inspiration, the enlightenment that we get from Yahweh's Torah teaching through the Spirit and through the words that comprise His Torah, and us being prepared to fly. You know, the flying metaphor is used quite often in association with the covenant's children, because just as when we're transformed from matter to light, it's like we grow wings and we can maneuver now in three dimensions as opposed to being stuck on terra firma. As light, we can transverse the entire universe. So that's the reference here. So much to be learned by this, particularly when we dig into the specific words. The next statement is also telling. It's God is saying, and when birds of prey, this is a yet in Hebrew. He's talking about vultures. These are scavengers that feed on death, descended. You know, God was creating the symbolism and conveying the symbolism that would lead to life. And so there are a group of fallen messengers. Malach is the Hebrew word for messenger, that have aligned with the adversary, the Lord, HaSatan, Satan. And when God provides his solution, they're going to do everything they can to thwart it, to devour it, to consume it, to feed upon it so that it is corrupted and becomes less known to people. After all, Abraham had invited all of his friends, all of his associates, every countryman to celebrate in this festival feast. And so this then depicts the vultures, the scavengers who feed on death. They descended. And they descended upon, this reads, the pagur, the lifeless corpses. So this shows that God's way is not unopposed. It is, in fact, opposed. And there's those who feed off of death, birds of prey, scavengers, vultures, who will descend and feed upon these corpses. and feed upon death. If you look at Islam, it's a religion that feeds upon death. Jihad and killing in Allah's name drive the religion. Always have. Always will. Now, this says that he blew them away for Abraham. It doesn't say that Abraham blew them away. I mean, what's Abraham going to do? Huff and puff and blow the house down? I mean, this is not the three little pigs here. You know, this is the only one that would be careful, capable of blowing them away would be God. And he did. Now, what's interesting here is Ruach. These birds of prey represent the Malach, or the fallen messengers, the fallen envoys who have leagued with Satan. They're spiritual beings. The Hebrew word for spirit, Ruach, is also the Hebrew word for wind. And the reason that they are the same is that the spirit is an outside influence. It's from the outside, but it can influence us. We can feel the spirit. We can be empowered by the spirit, just like a sailboat can be empowered by the wind. We can feel the wind. It's not inside of us, like nefesh is the Hebrew word for breath. It's something that's inside of us that comes out. The spirit is something outside that can come in and can influence and empower us. And so God blew them away, caused the spirits to blow on behalf of Abram. So we have this depiction now of this realization that there's going to be opposition to God's plan, to his Moed Mikre, to these celebrations where we get to party with God, which we're invited to meet with God. And God's remedy to that, which is to blow them away with his spirit. We'll return at this time tomorrow. May Yah bless between now and then.